And we are back, ready to make a little more magic today. You know, I got a, talking to the folks in the booth here, I got a an email on my Facebook page that I am not recognizing my coworkers here, my booth people or my producers. I just reference you guys, but I don't mention you by name. And I'm not doing that on purpose. I'm not ignoring you on purpose. It's just that, as you guys know, there are many of you that revolve in and out. There's not one person. But in order to give some recognition, I've decided that I will refer to you now by name. But you may not be here next week, and someone else may be here. So from now on, the person and people in the booth will just be referred to as Reggie. Right? You will just have a blanket name, Reggie. But at least there will be some recognition, because every week there's somebody different, and so it makes it easier just to call you Reggie. So all my helpers, individual as well as other people that are moving the different levels back there and helping me out, you are collectively called Reggie, okay? So now, let me just start over again and say, hey, all right, Reggie, are we ready? You like that? Yeah, right. Yeah, it's an interesting name. It's not a common name. You are Reggie. The people behind the scenes that you don't hear from, they are called Reggie, collectively. So, Reggie, will you check the levels, please? Thank you. And I won't. And I think what's nice about that is that name can be both genders. If there's a male working with me on a certain day, Reggie, of course, is R-E-G-G-I-E. However, if there is a female working with me one day, then it is Reggie, R-E-G-G-I. So there you go. It works perfect. So thank you, Facebook writer. You've actually added a new wrinkle to this theater of the mind that we are creating here on a weekly basis. So now, Reggie, can we actually get on with the official podcast? This is all behind the scenes stuff. This is not the official podcast, everyone. This is kind of a little peek behind the curtain, a step, just a step on the other side of the velvet rope to let you know what goes on behind the scenes as I prepare to make the magic, which is the Elton Jim Captain Podtastic podcast. So with that said, Reggie, levels are checked. Yes. Talent is ready. Yes. Three S's. Star. Smile. Strong. Yes. Here we go. Reggie. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. It is a binge-worthy buffet of information, entertainment, and hopefully just plain fun. And if you're not too careful, you just might learn something. The jello pudding. And put it in the in the book here. Episode 150. 150. Wow. If you want to hear the previous 149 episodes, you can go to my landing page at WGNplus.com, which can be found in the entertainment section on the webpage, and then go into another prompt which says Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you will find all previous 149 episodes as we create before your ears right now, episode 150. And so, thank you for your scrolling, for your downloading, for your clicking, whatever it is that you do to find us on a regular basis, which I hope you have been or are doing. Hopefully you've been around for all previous 149 episodes, or maybe you're just catching up. I don't know. But as I said, all I ask for is 1 hour. Of the 168 hours a week, I just ask for one. Is that too much? I don't think so. So this podcast will be posted and available for your listening pleasure on April 1st, which means that unbelievably, the month of March is over. Wow. Where did March go? And March has 31 days. I mean, we could say this about February because for the most part, except for every leap year, you know, February is 28 days and 3 days isn't that big of a difference with the longest month of our calendar year being 31 days. So 3 days extra is not all that much, but February does seem to, you know, to go by a little quicker, obviously, because it does. It goes by quicker because it does. How's that for a statement of the obvious? But even March, one of our longer months, wow, did that month go by fast. I can't remember what I really did. I shouldn't say that. I can, but wow, it just seemed to fly by. I think we're going to be talking about Thanksgiving and Christmas before we know it. Wow. And I always say, one of my running jokes, but it's really not a joke, especially as you get older, I believe that summer goes by so fast that summer is over on June 1st. That's how fast it goes by. By June 1st, summer's over. That's how fast it seems to go by. But wow, we are officially into spring, calendar-wise, I did a whole thing about this a couple of years ago. Meteorologically wise, that's a word that's not easy to say. Yeah, but Tom Skilling on WGN television can say it. Meteorological, yeah. Thanks, Micah. And so, yeah, we are officially into spring, inching closer every day towards summer. And so, yes, March is finished. And so what I wanted to talk about today is, with next week, April 8th, the ending of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, aka March Madness, I just wanted to share with you the fact and let you know that it is possible to go through the month of March now without the madness. I'm not trying to be a contrarian here. I know it seems like that. Everything that is popular, it seems that I do not indulge in. And to some extent, that's true. I've always found myself shying away from fads. And when something gets too popular, that's when I jump off the ship. I kind of pride myself on being ahead of the curve. And then when everybody catches up with me, that's when I jump off. When something, to me, in my view, when something is that popular and everyone likes it, it really can't be that special. At least that's the way I feel about it. Not in everything, but in many things. So yeah, I will not be one that jumps on a bandwagon all that often. I will not be one that wears the coolest clothes. I probably was wearing it 2 years before, but then when you see it being worn, you know, by you know, a cab driver or a three-year-old kid, you know it's not cool anymore. That's when I'm long past it then. And I don't pride myself on that. I'm not trying to say, hey, I'm Mr. Cool. I just have never really felt comfortable jumping on the bandwagon. I've always felt an inner sense of independence, and I've always felt that I'm confident enough to be who I am, that I don't need to join in just to be with everyone else. And that's what I think has happened with this March Madness. Are you into March Madness? Are you? And if you are you really into it? Or are you just playing along? Are you just trying to be with the scene, with the in crowd? Because it seems today that, my gosh, I mean, a month before March Madness, that's all you're hearing about. And now, I'm not talking about just sports here. March Madness has become one of these big event things, just like the Super Bowl. It's a sporting event, yes, but it has crept into the popular culture to the point where now everyone, seemingly, maybe aside from me and Reggie, will be into it for just because, well, it's everybody's doing it. You see, there's my Jack Benny. For heaven's sakes, Rochester, O'Don, you see. So I want to let you know that if you're somebody that's on the fence on this March Madness thing, it's possible to not be taken in by it with the brackets and all the conjecture before and the big announcement of the tournament teams and watching all the games and watching your brackets and this and that. I can tell you with all honesty, which I do on a regular basis here, I have never been involved in a March Madness NCAA men's tournament bracket. I have never filled out a bracket. I have never paid to be in the pool. I can honestly say that I may in my lifetime, I may have watched maybe 10 college basketball games, NCAA final games, and most of those were probably 40 years ago when DePaul, from here in Chicago, became a Cinderella team and got to the Final Four. They didn't win the championship. They actually lost to Indiana State and Larry Bird at the time. But that was a magical team. It took Chicago by storm, because people tend to forget, especially if you're younger, you don't know that in Chicago, in the late 60s and early 70s, all of Chicago sports, especially the mid to late 70s, most of Chicago sports were in a terrible state. Every team was terrible. Every major team was terrible. From 1975 through 1983, most of the teams were not doing well. They were beginning to. But those 4 or 5 years at the end of the 70s were horrendous. In the 80s, things started to pick up. The Blackhawks started to get good. They got Dennis Savard. The Bears obviously got good with Mike Ditka. The Cubs and the White Sox both won their divisions in the early 80s. But in the mid to late 70s, sports here was terrible. Every team was bad. And so here came DePaul, this small private college in the heart of the city, and it took the city and the country by storm. And it was truly a Cinderella story with Mark Aguirre and Ray Meyer. And so that's when I first, even for the first time in my life, paid any attention to college sports at all. And the way I looked at it is, and the way I still look at it, I don't watch college sports. I don't watch any bowl games over New Year's and Thanksgiving and Christmas in terms of football. Never have. I do not watch any college basketball. Never have. Like I said, very little. I watched a couple of minutes of last year's Loyola thing because that became a story too. But I never had, the way that I looked at it, first of all, growing up, I don't know about you, but I never had any personal connection to any college. I went to college, but growing up, I did not have an affinity for a college. It wasn't like I had some long history in my family of people that went to Notre Dame or Northwestern or any college. I was not in the college admission scandal club. So I didn't have any strong growing up ties to any place like that, where it was sort of in your family and in your blood. We didn't sit around the television and wear a certain school's colors and root for them. Just didn't do that. I mean, don't forget, I was an only child. I didn't have any brothers before me or sisters before me who may have gone to college and brought that. So that wasn't in my reality. And I didn't really know a lot of friends. I had some friends that were into it somewhat, but I wasn't interested. I didn't share that. So I never got into college sports. And then when I got a little older, even in my teens, and started to, everybody was talking about, oh, did you see the bowl game of this or the basketball game of that? And what was always struck me as strange, because I'm a big sports fan, and I played sports throughout my life from a young age, basketball, football, baseball, hockey, you know, racquetball for athletic kind of things. And, you know, I mean, I'm tennis. I mean, I've always been active and always been sports minded. But when I watched college sports, to me, it didn't, the end game really wasn't worth it. I mean, when I used to watch baseball, which was my favorite sport, or hockey or football, you know, every year the guys would come back. The same players would come back. You could follow their careers. And many of these guys went on to do amazing things and go into the Hall of Fame. So there was a real consequence. There was a real reason to follow this. I mean, they were called world champions, right? So it seemed like the activity certainly was worth the effort by the fan. But when I watched college sports, in my mind, I'm like, I really can't have any loyalty, because in my view, like, aside from my home team, if I didn't have a connection, I still enjoyed, like in the 70s, I liked to watch baseball. And so, you know, the Cincinnati Reds were one of the best teams at that time, when they had, you know, Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and Johnny Bench. And so, you know, you could follow these teams for about 4 or 5 years, and every year those guys were on the team. There wasn't free agency at the time. And so you'd follow that team. You didn't care about the city itself. I didn't have connection to Cincinnati, but I respected and liked those players, so I would follow that team. Well, with college sports, if I didn't have a connection to the school itself, having gone there or having someone in my family as an alumni and sharing that with me, if I didn't have that connection to the school and that loyalty and being invested in the school, then I would have to be invested in the players, right? Just like I was in professional sports. And those players in professional sports were there all the time. But in college sports, I'm watching these games and everybody's going crazy and they know these people's names. And I'm like, to me, I'm not as drawn to the college game, because in my mind, three quarters, if not more, of the people that I'm rooting for and acting like it's life or death in watching them play, three quarters, if not more of them, will never play sports again in their lives in any kind of meaningful way. Next year, half of that team will be selling insurance or going to law school or whatever. They're done. That's their most, three quarters of them more of college athletes do not become pros. You never see or hear of them again. You may buy a garage from them. You might buy a car from them. They may be your lawyer, but they're not playing sports anymore. So in my view, it was like, well, then what's the big deal? Why should I be cheering for this guy? Next year, he could be, you know, cashing my groceries at Jewel. So I just never got into college sports, put it that way. So what I'm telling those of you who maybe are not into college sports or not into March Madness, you can get through the month without being into it. You don't have to jump on the bandwagon. Everybody is, I mean, now, obviously, well, Jim, what sparked this? Why are you so angry about this? Well, here's what really, I mean, because once again, if you enjoy the March Madness, if you enjoy going to the bars or you just enjoy the camaraderie, you enjoy your brackets, great. I'm not saying it's wrong. If that is your thing, if you are that interested and invested in the college sports experience or you like the brackets and the whole thing, more power to you. I love it. Anything that you could do that makes your life happy, I say go for it. My only proviso is if you're not, you don't have to pretend. There is a life without that. You can do it. But what sparked this diatribe? I saw a story in the paper a couple of weeks ago, right at the beginning of the March Madness tournament. And it said how, after years of companies, corporate America, different companies, workplaces, if you will, after years, especially how the bracket phenomenon of the NCAA tournament in basketball has just blossomed over the last 20 or 25 years, if not more. There are workplaces now, some workplaces all ban all kind of betting or brackets or, you know, football pools at the Super Bowl, brackets during NCAA basketball, you name it. It's a workplace and there's no room for that. And some places are very, very serious about that. And most places have been. But in today's world, there's two phenomenons I think that are going on, maybe three. First of all, the ever-present social media. Everybody wants to be a part of the crowd. Now, we all have to jump on and hit our like buttons. Oh, do I long for the days when there were individuals. We have really become a world of lemmings. We just follow. Everybody follows something now. How many followers do you have? It's right there in the word. Or how many likes do you have? How many views do you have? And it's all based on nothing. It's all virtual nothing. But that's where we're at today. So there's this social media pressure of, well, everybody else seems to be in on it, so I should be in on it. Well, okay, I'm telling you, you don't have to be, but that's one of the pressures. There's this need to be liked, this need to be a part of the group. So that's where now the brackets for March Madness have taken on a heightened awareness and popularity. Two, more people are going to college these days, right, than maybe 40 or 50 years ago, which means, as I said before in my situation, there are now more people in the workplace that have a connection to a school. And so they now do have a vested interest, if you will. So 40 or 50 years ago, the NCAA tournament wasn't all that popular because a lot of people didn't go to college. But now a lot of people are going to colleges. And so they're into the college sports scene. Even if their team isn't in the tournament, they went to basketball games on campus. They had the college experience. And so they're more into the college sports scene than the average person was 40 years ago. And then you've got more people going, so the chances are that that their school is in it. So they do have that vested interest. So that's the second one. And third, it is now impossible, practically, to police anyone on a personal level because of technology, right? I mean, if we want to, we can see, we can hear anything we want, either sneaking it in or being as blatant as possible. We've got the phone, we've got the computer, there's televisions, but certainly the phone. I mean, you know, you could watch that basketball game. If you want to hide it from your boss, you can watch it in your lap while you're at your computer. Or you could have it on your computer while you're working on a computer at your desk in a little window. So how does a boss stop the basketball NCAA fanatic from watching these games? Because don't forget, it's not like it's on Sunday. Like football is every Sunday, or college football is on every Saturday. The NCAA tournament, basketball tournament, because there's so many teams, the games are on during the week, during the day, during the workday. And so those people that are crazy about the brackets and all that stuff, I mean, they are finding ways to watch or listen to the games. So I see this story that said, after many years of offices and workplaces trying to police this and forbid it, all they're finding is that all they're doing is encouraging their employees to find ways to be more secretive in how they watch the games. Because at the end of the day, these people are going to watch the games, right? Because sadly, in many ways, in many offices, in many workplaces, there is an atmosphere, a community of work is supposed to be fun all the time. It's one reason I think we have to really start to reassess how we view our economic numbers. Everybody's saying, well, geez, the economy doesn't grow at the same percentage as it used to. The economic engine is not, you know, it used to be 10%, 5%. Now it's barely 3 or 4. And, you know, a couple of years ago it was 1. And we're blaming, you know, the presidents of the day. Obama was blamed for a low economy. Trump, they're saying, oh, you know, it's, even though it's growing, it's starting to slow down. I don't think the president or economists have anything to do with it. I think what's happened over the last 20 or some years is that the workplace, sadly, has become half work, half playground. And so it's been indulged. And so I don't think there's a lot of work getting done. I know there's not a lot of good work getting done. How many catastrophes have we seen over the last several years that just seem like, well, how did that happen? I don't know what the story is in the specifics of this Boeing thing, but somehow a whole line of planes that have some kind of a defect got out into the market and have killed people. There's some layer of proficiency and back checks or something that's not happening that used to. I've said this before. We seem to be testing things in the public now. And then we fix them. We used to test things before they got to the public and made sure they worked. But we don't do that anymore. We rush things to the market and then we let the market find out what's wrong and then we do a fix. That's the way the technology world has always worked. And now that's seeping into other more dangerous and in times life-threatening situations. We can't continue to do that, folks. A workplace is a workplace. I don't understand. So the story I read was after 20 years of trying to police people not watching the NCAA tournament, many workplaces now have just given in. If you can't beat them, join them. That's the boss saying that. Where, has that term been diluted? How is the employee setting the tone for the office? The person who works there is setting the tone? I don't understand that. The head of the company, the boss, says, look, there's no watching of the games in our office. If you are caught, you will be suspended for a week with no pay. If you get caught again, you will be fired. That simple. I think, you know, hey, if workers have to watch these games so much, they have to watch them. They can't get through their day because their brackets are so important. Obviously, much more important than their work in their minds. There is a way that they could be available to watch all the games all day. Very simple. They're fired. Then they will have all the time they want. They won't have money to pay for their rent or maybe pay for their television to watch it, but they will have the time. It's called work for a reason, folks. When I'm seeing that officer throwing up their arms and saying, well, you can't beat them, join them. You can beat them. You make the rules. You hold all the cards, Mr. Boss, Mr. CEO, Mr. Head of the company. It's not tolerated. That's how you do it. And yes, there is a way to get through March. I get through every March and early April without any March madness. It's possible. I don't watch a game. I don't know who won last year. I don't know who won 5 years ago. I don't know who's in it now. I don't know who the Sweet 16 is. I don't know anything. And you know what? Jimmy cracked corn, and I don't care. I'm not interested in it. It's not that I'm saying it's not important, because we all have our obsessions. That's fine. But my point is, you don't need to feel obligated to get into this if you're not into it. You can find other things. It's just there's another thing going on that you're not interested in. You don't have to jump on the bandwagon. You don't have to give in to the pressure. And companies, you don't have to throw your hands up and say, I can't control my employees. Yes, you can. You have the purse strings. This will not be tolerated in our office. Sorry, this is where you work. If you don't like it, then go find another job. We need to start getting serious, folks. This is not a playground. Yes, that whole Google workplace thing works well for that industry. The people that are doing that kind of work, the computer engineers, the coders, the programmers, they live in their own heads. They work for long periods of time staring at their screens and doing their work, and then they need a chance to blow some steam and take a little break and then come right back to it. So yeah, having this kind of virtual office / house where there's ping pong tables and pool tables and free food, yeah, that works in a tech world. I know, I've worked in that world and with those people. I understand that. But not every business is attuned to that kind of atmosphere. So that shouldn't be the norm. But once again, the pressures, oh, well, we got to be cool. We have to, you know, to get people to work for us, we got to look like we're cool. So we have to have free food and ping pong tables. You're not getting work done. The pool tables, that's why they were pool halls back then. You went there after work. That's why people had ping pong tables in their basements. And it's the same thing with the NCAA tournament here. If you're that interested in it, that's fantastic. But that's a hobby. That's a personal interest. That's not a workplace thing. But meanwhile, in an effort to be cool, companies are throwing up their hands and saying, oh, well, can't beat them, join them. BS. Grow up. It's possible to get through March without watching one college basketball game. Why do you say that, Jim? How is it possible? I know it's possible. I'm doing it. I did it. I'm not going to watch the Final Four. I'm not going to watch the Sweet 16 or the Final Eight. No, And I'm not saying that I'm better. I'm just saying it's possible. You don't need to get crazy with this if you're not into it. If you're into it, great. But then also, you got to put it in perspective. If you have the ability to watch all the games within your lifestyle and your job, great. But if you're at a job for 8 hours, you can't watch the game. And you have enough technology, I'm sure, at your hands to record the game and watch it later. So shame on the bosses for throwing up their hands up and saying, well, we'll just have to have pizza parties and we just have to, you know, have all our whatever screens we have at the in our offices, they just have to show the game, so everybody will just watch the games. Do you think that good work is getting done in that atmosphere? Are we wondering why planes are crashing? Are we wondering why electronic cars are hitting people? Our standard for excellence is going down because we are indulging this behavior of everything has to be fun. I'm all for fun. I'm Mr. Fun. That's me, Mr. Fun. No, I'm all for fun. I get it. But there is a time for work. And you have to be able to concentrate. And just good enough isn't good enough. You should want to excel at your job. And also have fun and indulge your likes and your hobbies with as much gusto and as enthusiasm as possible. I certainly embrace that. You know that from me. I've been to 192 Elton John concerts. I'm not being a hypocrite here. But I found a way to put it in my lifestyle. And there was a time when I did not go to all these concerts, because I had responsibilities that did not allow me to. I didn't have that much time off. I didn't have as much time. So yeah, I sacrificed. I didn't take days off. I didn't call in sick. I went to my job. I still had my interests, but I had my job. And at the same way, don't feel the pressure. If you're into the March Madness, fine, but you know what? There are other things on television to watch during that time. There are other things to do during that time. It doesn't have to be this craze that you're jumping into just because, well, everyone else is doing, I should be. No, do your own thing. But certainly, at the workplace, if the edict is put out, there's no football pools, there's no NCAA brackets, there's no game watching, and here are the consequences. We are sadly now a society that is slowly chipping away at consequences. We are allowing horrible work habits, horrible behavior. Give them another chance. Give them another chance. No consequences. And that's why we're in the shape that we're in today, folks. Now, does this all get tied back to the brackets? No, I'm not blaming the NCAA men's basketball tournament for all the ills in society, but I am blaming the more pervasive, indulgent society of everything's fun and no one's wrong. And, well, if you can't beat them, join them. No. We need to grow up. We need to get serious. People's lives are getting lost because things are falling through the cracks. I'm not blaming March Madness for that. But it's a symptom when a workplace throws up its hands and says, well, okay, watch the games. We'll order pizza. We'll watch it. Yeah, that's fun. That's nice. But not every day. The tournament goes on every day. Can't do that. It's a job. It's work. And yes, there is a way to get through March without the madness. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And now we go to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily. Whoops, hold on. There we go. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So, I wanted to chat with you today because we now have had about a week or so to digest the entire, what is it, Operation Varsity Blues?
Yeah.
Now, you know what's funny?
One of my favorite movies of all time, you know.
Well, you know, Varsity Blues. Now this is what I'm going to show my age again here. Because I know of the movie, and I know that Vanderbeek was in it, correct?
The Beak, yes. I like to call him the Beak. Yes, James Vanderbeek.
But I can honestly say that I never saw it.
Well, now is the time to watch it.
So I guess my point is that what it's basically about?
No. It is a little bit weird. I think that maybe they just were taking a little creative license.
Oh, okay.
Code naming.
Yeah, because I didn't think that's what it was about at all. No, I was like, no, it's a football movie, wasn't it?
It was a high school football movie.
Yeah.
But Texas. It's like a very Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, type. Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought that was kind of strange. So, yeah, sometimes they just... Because I was like...
You need a catchy... Look, if you have a code name... Right.
Oh, right.
We
yeah.
had to deal with those sometimes when we worked like in the media world.
Oh, right.
You have, because sometimes people don't want stuff to get out.
Yeah, you name it. Yeah, you give it a code. I mean, like they do with, you know, the FBI and the CIA and the Secret Service give codes.
It's a snappy code name for sure, but it definitely does not relate back to the plot of that film.
Right.
Other than that film is about. Sports, and I suppose right. there is an element of like part of the scandal has to do with recruiting people who weren't really going to be on the teams
right.
anyway.
Yeah,
that's about as far as the connection goes.
Yeah, but so now that we've had about a week for this to digest, and the story has taken on a few different turns since the initial. Breakout of the story and the biggest thing obviously was with a couple of actresses, Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman, and still we're up for grabs to see what's going to happen with them. Are they going to be pleaded out? Are they going to go to jail? Mm-hmm. But I was just wondering, I think it was important. I mean, I had my rant on this in the last podcast, number 149, but I do think it's valuable to talk to somebody who has children, and even though your kids are young and they're not ready to go to college, but I think that this story certainly has become a pop culture story because of some of the people involved, obviously.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But it also does play to a bigger subject matter of just the ultimate story about parenting philosophies and parenting motivations and so I think it's while I think I've got a valid opinion because I've said on many occasions I think that because I don't, a lot of people say, well, you have no right to talk because you're not a parent, but I also think
you're a person living in society.
Well, no, but I also think that
an opinion on stuff.
No, I understand it, but my point is people say, oh, well, you don't know what it's like, and I think that it's actually to my advantage in terms of commenting on a parenting kind of issue because I don't have a vested interest and right. I don't have that internal parental feeling that I could give somebody a pass. I'm looking at things from a very objective view in that I don't have any skin in the game. And so I can look at it with a little more of a clear windshield as opposed to having some of that with being a parent. So people a lot of times just, oh, well, you know, I'm like, well, no, I think I have a little more of it. But I do think it's important to get both sides. And so I'd like to see to talk to you, not only because of the pop culture implications, but as a parent who, you know, you're right in the midst of it. Your kids are relatively young. They're still in single digit ages.
Yes. Oh, but I tell you what, it is going fast. I mean, really fast.
Oh, sure. But my point is you are still.
James, think about it this way. James is basically halfway to being out of my house.
That's true.
If you think about it like that. He's going to be nine very soon.
Yeah.
And that alone blows me away. Yeah. He is halfway to going off to college.
Right. And you are still involved in many parental kinds of things, whether it's, you know.
Well, I hope so.
No, I mean, in terms of, I mean, some of the things that, you know.
Once they get older, you mean?
I'm just saying, but right now it's about, you know, schools and activities and interests.
I'm in all that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think while I can give a more clinical view of it and maybe my take is different, I think it's only right to get another side. And I think you certainly are qualified to do that because and probably more so in that my big question to you is, you know, one of my things about this last week when it first broke was maybe it's time for a lot of parents to take a step back. It's not the specifics of this scandal with getting a kid into college, but the question of how involved, how overly involved do or are parents in this era, and does this scandal, when you see what it leads to and the possible consequences of it, and when people, my point was, a lot of people, as kids are growing up, parents sort of get used to bending the rules, and then they can't bend them anymore, and then they start to break them. And I think
that's what happened in this case.
And that's what happened here. So I guess my biggest question to you is, and we could talk about your initial reactions, but when you heard about this and you started to digest it, did you do any self-reflection?
Oh, well, when I first heard about this, I was walking down the street, reading, like scrolling through my phone, which is not a good idea. I don't know why I'm doing that. I'm, you know, I'm like crossing intersections and stuff, but of course.
Yeah, I mean, you're a lost. Yeah, I mean, you're a lost cause. So just, you know.
I know.
Yeah,
I see this headline that's like Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman indicted in college admissions scheme.
Right.
And I'm really not exaggerating when I say it stopped me dead in my tracks because I had to do like a double take and reread it because I was like, none of it made sense to me at all. I was like, Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman indicted, but also in a college admission scheme. Like, what is what? Like, what? Nationwide. I think that's what it said.
Right.
Nationwide.
Right.
It was like the most bizarre. I think I even sent it to you and maybe like
you did.
A friend of mine who's really into pop culture. And I was like, is this not the most bizarre entertainment news that you can remember in like maybe decade, maybe since OJ, right?
Right. Yeah. It certainly is crazy.
It really caught me off guard and I found it to be very bizarre. Have I reflected as a parent? I mean, I would say I've reflected in the sense that this whole thing brings up a lot of questions for me. I find it very bewildering, but the weird thing is, it's not as though people with wealth and privilege have never, like, what do you say, greased the...
Oh, this has been going on forever.
Kids into schools.
How do you how do you think George Bush got into Yale?
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, it's certainly not the first time that parents have done whatever they, you know, in their minds it takes to get their kids into a school. But obviously in this case, they went about it in a way that's illegal. But it does make me think. It's like, I mean, look, there's the whole, we could get into a whole thing about why. I mean, you have two sides of this. You have the one side where the parents are are bribing athletic coaches and directors and whoever else, you know, whoever they're working with at the different schools to make it appear as though their child may have a shot at being on the team, which apparently means that that opens the door to them to be accepted into the school, whether they actually end up playing on that team or not. This is my understanding of like one side of the scandal, right?
Right.
So there's that, there was that way in, and that apparently is the way that Lori Loughlin and her husband, that was the route they were taking. They had two daughters. They're paying between the two daughters $500,000.
Right.
To get their girls into USC on the basis that their girls would either be on or considered for the rowing team or something.
Yeah, I think it was the, yeah.
Team. Okay. And the girls don't row crew or
yeah,
whatever.
It's like 5 foot tall. Yeah, I mean.
Okay, so there's that side. Then there's the other side, which apparently allegedly is the route Felicity Huffman took, which is you pay someone to take the ACT or the SAT for your child, or to correct the answers.
Right, exactly.
Right, to boost their score. Now, putting aside the fact that, first of all, if you're paying $500,000 just to do this, like, Lori Loughlin and her husband couldn't figure out a legal way to kind of grease the skids for their daughters and get them into USC. I mean, you know, donate a wing of it or you know, rehab.
Well, I think their kids are whatever. So, but yeah, but their kids, I think, are, I mean, first of all, that girl, Olivia Jade, whatever.
And yeah, Olivia Jade.
And I'm
she's
even
like
mad.
YouTube. She's already like a YouTube. Yeah.
Well, I'm even mad. I'm mad that I know her name.
I know you should be.
yeah. But my point is, I don't think she's even close to getting into a place like USC in terms of grades.
Right. There,
I don't think she's even. So I think that that's the route that they had to take, because you would have to ultimately have someone else take the test for her. She is nowhere near. She shouldn't even be in college. Let's be honest. I mean, she's a 19-year-old model, and the only reason that she has 2 million followers is because they're probably horny guys who like to see her in a bikini. This is not about 19-year-olds who are wondering if she's eating rice cakes today. That's not why she has those followers. But regardless, my point is,
now,
I think
so,
they...
Okay, so... all right, they're seeing, like, that's going to take a lot more. I get it. Okay. Now, here's the thing. As a parent, I mean, of course you want the best for your kids. Of course you do. But I think by the time they're that age, you have a decent handle on what's going to happen. And quite frankly, you know, if you're worried about what their prospects are beyond high school, you got to get involved. You got to get involved, right? Get them tutors. These people have money. They can do this. You get them tutors. Stay on top of them. But fine, putting that aside too. What, as a parent, though, what is going to happen? So let's say I figure out a way to get my kid into Yale, and my kid's never normally going to get into Yale, but I have figured this out somehow, some way, even if it's just my name, even if my name gets my kid into a school. What then? Right? What happens when I send little James off to Yale? And he arrives there and he's surrounded by students who did get the grades and did get the test scores. And they are now there and they're in it and they're responsible for their own education. And, you know, but what is going to happen to a kid that doesn't have the grades to get into Yale, doesn't have the test scores to get into Yale, but now suddenly they're at Yale and they're surrounded by kids who are operating at that level? Right.
Well, I think
taught by instructor and by professors who have a certain level of expectation of their capabilities.
Well, I think this
you're
gets to
yourself up for you're setting your kid up for failure when you're doing this, because you're basically throwing them in. You're throwing them into a swimming pool and they're still taking swim lessons. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the problem is, though,
they don't even know how to swim.
But see, you're looking at it from a more responsible parental view. They, I think, because of their station and their status, I think that these people are just as concerned about the reflection on them as they are about the child's future. I mean, let's face it here. You know, if you can afford to spend $500,000 to cheat, plus another, I would assume, close to a half, a half $1 million, if not more, to send the kid to 4 years of school with the tuition.
Right. Yeah.
Then I would think that that kid, you are going to be able to provide for that kid, whether that kid has, you know, a Yale degree or not. You're going to be able to provide and give that kid a life of luxury and possibly open up. So my point is, they're not thinking about that. What they're thinking about is, my daughter's starting at USC. And that, and you know, and don't forget, I have created this thing, and I have closely nurtured this to be a reflection of me. And so the next point is, for me to look good, my fantastic creation has to go to a great school, because I have to continue this facade of this child reflecting me and my
I understand that, but image. This is also what I think, and I specifically in the case of Lori Loughlin and her husband, who is kind of a big fashion, you know, like his line is sold at Target, but he's worth like tens of millions of dollars. And he built, you know, well, I guess he probably, I think it was a family business, but even still, he's an entrepreneur, right? He's got his own business. I think in their case, it's still, I understand what you're saying. And I think people can get caught up in a certain, like, keeping up with the Joneses mentality of like, oh, you know, my daughter got in here. Where did your kids get in? Blah, blah. I understand
that. That girl didn't even want to go to school.
But this is what I'm looking at Olivia Jade, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, first of all, it might have been a much better idea for her parents to look at her and say, you know what? And you know your kids. This is the thing, too. You know your kids. You know if they're academically inclined or they're not necessarily, but that doesn't mean they're not talented people. They could have talents in other ways. But you're them. I would look at my kid and say, we are better off giving our daughter $500,000 to start her own company than we are trying to pay a bribe to get her into USC. And here's the other weird thing about Olivia Jade. She actually, to be honest with you, I know you don't like that you know her name, but she had already started building something, and she's a 17-year-old girl. She had figured out a way to monetize what she was doing. She, to the point where when this all broke, she started losing endorsements and getting dropped by companies like Sephora, which is a very well-known brand, especially among women. You know, it's a cosmetics retail operation. So I'm looking at this and saying, you know, Olivia Jade actually was already building something that her parents could be proud of. I mean, yes, it's a little superficial and it's different from what we're used to because we're not part of that generation. And so we're not about social media, and we're certainly not about figuring out ways to monetize social media. However, this girl was 17 years old and she was building a brand and she was building a business in a way that's almost as sophisticated as trained, educated people who are working in, you know, industries do. So,
well, that's my point. So that's why I think that this was more about them, that they wanted, you know, I don't know if they went to college.
They wanted brand name education.
Yeah, they wanted to be able to tell their friends in their circle that Olivia, oh, and even to those people that thought she was a little ditzy. Oh, really? Well, look at who's going. I mean, my kid is brilliant and bright and pretty, and she's got everything going for her. And God knows, if to your point about, you know, would she be able to even handle the class load? You know, if she somehow did graduate, that degree would have meant nothing. From what I'm hearing from some of the stories, it was all about the college experience. You know, Lori Loughlin went on television and was so proud and like, oh, she got to play the beaming mother who is then dealing with separation anxiety. Oh, you know, but she was doing it in one of those egotistical ways. Oh, you know, once again, it was all about her. Yes, I am now having to get used to my daughter going to college, and now it's my coping mechanism. And
right.
And so I guess my bigger I think, like I said, look, nepotism and cronyism and all this other stuff has been going on in colleges. Everybody knows it, whether it's legacies, alumni, as you said, donating a wing, whatever it is. We all know that. This got to a different level because you were you were getting into bribery, and Felicity Huffman's, I think hers is just as bad. I mean, she didn't pay as much,
but it's
worth. You know, I saw a quote from William Macy, who obviously has to support his wife. But I saw a quote of his saying, not directed at this, but he made a quote several years ago. Hey, I have no problems with nepotism, and whatever I can do to give my kid a leg up, that's fine. I understand that. There's nothing wrong with opening a door. But when you start to break the law, and I mean, my question is, I don't care what these kids say. These kids knew that shenanigans were going on.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is the weird thing too, like with the Felicity Huffman thing. It's like, I don't know the ins and outs of this. I don't know if they had their kid take the ACT and then it wasn't like a real thing, but someone else took the real ACT. Because I heard someone saying something like the kid had to know something was up because like who takes the ACT at home? So that made me think, I just haven't read enough about the details of it, but is it the case maybe that it was reported that they arrange for their child to take the ACT at home, which I think can be done in cases where people have special needs.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You have to go through a process right. to like determine.
But
whether
she doesn't have special needs.
But then you got to say to yourself, like, so then when the kid, whether the kid knew ahead of time, like something's up, or now they know, obviously, oh my God, how would you feel if you were like, my parents didn't even have enough faith in me to like, take this test, they like pay
right.
someone
right. Oh, so
to it, take it
yeah.
for me.
You could look at it that way, or you could say, once again, what kind of example or lesson are you equipping your child with?
Right.
In terms of at any cost or any means necessary, as opposed to
now,
hard work and what you get and what you earn. You know, I mean, if your parents are willing to break the rules, then that's your example.
Right, exactly. Now, William H. Macy, I don't know if this is true, but I read that the only reason he's not being indicted.
Yeah, right, because he was not indicted.
And charged.
Yeah.
Is but I read that he is like he was involved in calls and emails about the younger daughter, and apparently they didn't end up going through with that fraud for the younger daughter, which is the only reason that he is not actually being charged in this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like his nose was clean and now he's just having to support his wife.
Oh no, I don't know. No, his nose isn't clean. No,
lucky that he was only on record.
Yeah, no, his nose isn't clean. My point is, given his wife's situation, he can't distance himself from this, so he's got to support her.
Of course not.
I mean,
now,
but my... go ahead.
Well, the other funny thing, too, about this, because, again, like, I think this obviously sheds light on something that is, like, we never even imagined was going on. But it's not really a surprise that, you know, people have been using their wealth and their privilege and their names to give their kids a leg up forever. And there are legal ways to do that. But, so did you see the Dr. Dre thing?
Yeah.
He tweeted a picture of his daughter and said, my daughter got accepted into USC all on her own, no jail time. And then like a couple days later, it came out that he and Jimmy Iovine
donated $70 million.
Yeah, had donated $70 million. This wasn't even that long ago. This was in 2013. Like, did he forget that it was like only a matter of 6 years ago that he donated? Now, I'm not saying... His daughter could have got, maybe she had the grades and the test scores to get into USC.
But that doesn't hurt.
It is kind of funny that he went out of his way to poke these people in the eye about it.
I mean, we are in an age now, like I said, sadly, where we have to really hit the reset button because we are so off of our compass here. And I guess what I was saying about this in a larger sense, and I've been saying this throughout my entire life,
since the dawn of time.
Since the dawn of time. Parenting is the most important and the most thankless job there is.
That is true.
And so my point is, if you do a great job at parenting, two things in my mind have to happen. First of all, if you wake up every morning and the first thing that is not on your mind is where are my kids or how are they, then you're doing a bad job.
Right.
I would think. Now, once again, I'm not a parent, but I would think if you wake up, your first thought every morning should be that.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you ultimately do a good job as a parent, you are hopefully arming this child with the tools to be self-sufficient and to go out into the world and make a way for themselves. And if you have done that, and if you have provided the correct tools, ultimately, and this is the part that many parents maybe don't want to face or can't understand, and I understand it, but once again, it's easy for me to point this out because I don't have the connection. But ultimately, if you do a great job, your kid does not need you 24 right. hours a day anymore. When they're an adult, they can go out and do and live life and live their own life and make their own decisions and don't need you. And that has got to be a very difficult reality to accept because you have spent their entire lives nurturing this. But if you've done the best job, ultimately, that kid shouldn't come to you every 10 minutes wondering what to do or calling you 10 times a day.
Right.
You have created a self-sufficient...
Or move back in with you when they're 30 years old.
Right.
Which happens to some, I think, especially in like the last handful of years where, you know, the economy has
right.
been the greatest. That actually is a reality for some
people. Yeah. So my point is, so I'm sure that there is such a disconnect in many people's in parents' minds because they have been so involved that then they don't understand, well, wait a minute, I still want to be involved. And the kid is saying, look, you've done your job. Oh, I always say, look to the animal kingdom.
Yes.
Our biggest problem in our culture, ultimately, dating back to when it started, was we have always put ourselves above the animals. Like we're somehow better. And we are animals. We are a species like every other animal. And if you look at the animal kingdom, the parents teach the youngster how to survive. They give them the skills in their little world of how to survive, which in a mostly animal world, it's how do you get food and how do you not become food?
Right.
And they will they will be very doting on them when they're small, and they will lick them and carry them and clean them and watch them and protect them. And then when they get old enough, they will take them out on hunts and they'll watch and stuff like that. But then there is a point when the parents go, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah.
And those parents don't know what happened to those kids. And the kids go on, and I'm now, once again, they live on instinct. We have logic and emotion. I understand that. But my point is, the basic of that is, the parent's job is to prepare and man these children with the tools so they can be self-sufficient and they no longer need to depend on the parent to open doors and bribe people. And that, sadly, I understand, has got to be difficult because you're like, well, wait a minute. I love this child. I want to continue. Well, you know what? The child themselves says, I want to be my own person.
Right.
Thank you for giving me the tools and the confidence. And now it's my job to create my path in life, not right. the path that you want for me. But, you know, these people of privilege, especially like you're seeing here, you know, they are so involved in every aspect that this was just another logical step.
Right.
You know,
well,
I mean,
here's the other question I've asked myself. Just also, again, specifically about Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman. I mean, I know there are a lot of other people involved in this scandal that we don't even know who they are.
Exactly.
We wouldn't recognize their names.
Right.
I mean, certainly they're privileged people. They're wealthy people. Fine. And I'm sure they work in all different industries. But in the case of these two, I mean, it kind of makes me wonder, did they even know what they were doing was illegal, or did they just think it was, like, unethical?
Well, once again,
it makes me wonder, because, I mean, they're not really, think about it, they're actors. They're not really...
Well, I mean, I'm sure that's going to be, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's going to be one of their defenses. I mean, they're going to say how they were hoodwinked by this guy.
Yeah.
Who basically probably...
Like, they thought they were paying a consultant.
Yeah, we were saying, hey, we know that this is probably, once, as I said, they may have thought, to your point, which is a good point, I mean, they legitimately may have thought that they weren't doing anything wrong, illegal, but they certainly knew they were bending.
Maybe not illegal.
They knew they were bending the rules. And this is what I said. This gets back to when you are writing the kid's essay, when you are making the kid's seventh grade science project.
Right.
When you are getting involved to the point where you are doing the work by, if you're that involved, when you are bending rules, and you know that you shouldn't be helping to build the volcano or make the Pinewood Derby. You know that.
Well, in defense of the Pinewood Derby, can I just say?
Uh-oh.
Can I just say, though, that having been involved in the Pinewood Derby for the last couple of years, there's no way that an 8-year-old would be able to build that car without an adult's, not even just intervention or help, but like truly like an adult. I mean, look, my husband can barely build the car. So, you know, but I agree with you on, you shouldn't be doing the projects for you shouldn't be doing the science project for your kids. You shouldn't be doing their, you know, their reports for that. Like, I agree with you.
Because not only do you get used to bending the rules, so that when now you're worried about your kid going to college and somebody comes along and lays out this thing in your mind, well, this is just another extension of making the volcano.
Right. Right.
And so,
as a parent, what I guess the approach that I like to take and hope that I will continue to take, even when things get tricky and they get tough and the kids are getting older and you start to really worry more about their path, you know, but you can be there with them. You can be there alongside of them. You can sit them down and say, okay, you've got this big project you're working on. You know, what is your goal? Have you thought about that? What, how are you going to, let's map this out. How are you going to approach this project? But a science project, the science fair thing is a perfect example, because there's very specific criteria. You can sit there and you can be involved and you can go through with your kid and say, okay, so what's going to be your hypothesis? How do you plan to test it? You know, walk.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And make sure that they're thinking about it. They have a plan. But then that's it, you know. And as a parent, if they don't understand, then you help them figure out, like, well, you know, if you don't understand how you're going to do that, let's think about it. What could be some ways? What could be some options? But, you know, you can get involved and you can help them think through things and you can help them when they're struggling or when they don't understand. You can help them.
And that is your role. Your role is there as advisor and supporter, not as doer. And that's my point.
Right.
And don't forget, if the kid then, as the kid gets older, and as I said, you know, for the first 18 years of a kid's life, it's very simple for a parent of any means to be manipulative, if that's the word you want to use, or controlling of your child's environment. You can pretty much dictate what happens in terms of who they play with or
Exactly.
Or what they're in. But the challenge is, this is what this scandal highlights, is when you get to 18, that bubble breaks. Because now you're really going out into the real world. Even when you go from preschool to grammar school to middle school to high school, it's still a little community bubble that you can still build and still have your tentacles in. But when you start to go to college, now this is the real world. This is the big world. These are people that you don't have immediate access to or immediate influence to. And the rest of the world is now, for the first time, both the parent and the kid is realizing that they are not the greatest thing on earth. This is the first time that they've come to that realization. If you are one of those parents who are consistently, you know, doing for the child, as opposed to letting the child figure it out for themselves. I'm not. Right. I'm all for supporting and guiding. What I don't like is when the parent is dictating, because then you are now you have basically raised a veal that is not prepared. And so why are we? Everybody seems baffled now. Why are all these high school and college kids committing suicide? Why are all these 20 and 30 year olds committing suicide? Why is there all this bullying? Why are my kids? Because these kids do not have coping skills.
Right.
Now when they get into the real world, they are not automatically thought of as the greatest thing on earth, as they have been spoon-fed for the first 10 years of their lives, and they do not know how to deal with it. They are lambs to the slaughter.
Right.
And that is why they are killing themselves, because they cannot, they're not able to cope with the simplest of things. And so that's my only point, is when you see this, the kid also gets used to the parent doing stuff. Oh, well, I don't have to do that. My mom and get it. You know, so same thing here. Well, my mom and dad will get me into college somehow.
Yeah. I mean,
my mom and dad, you know, so that's what scares me, is it's double dependency.
Yeah, I think. Well, people are now acknowledging when it comes to college admissions that the system is clearly broken. And it's not even just about this scheme that's being investigated.
Oh, no. It's the whole, yeah, it definitely.
It just shines a light on all of the ways, creative ways, that people get their kids into schools that maybe they would not be able to get into on their own. I mean, that said, it's tough. I don't know. You know, college for us was a long time ago. I have heard that, you know, kids these days, and it's very, very competitive. It's not just even a matter anymore of getting the grades and getting the test scores. It's like you have to have, like,
oh yeah, the community, you know, service, kind
of
community and
service.
Oh yeah,
you've got to have a lot of extracurriculars. You've got to be like the most well-rounded person. And so I can see how some of the kids who, you know, regardless of whether their parents are helping them out or not, are running themselves ragged trying to keep up with this. And there was a documentary like a handful of years ago. I always call it Road to Nowhere, but I don't think that's what the actual name of it was. It was something along those lines. But it basically, it focused on, I think there was actually a school in Chicago that they followed students. And then there was one in Carmel, Indiana, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But that was kind of the whole theme. It was about, you know, the challenges that they face trying to get into schools, how people are trying to help prepare their kids for success. Race to Nowhere. That's what it was called. Race to Nowhere. I don't know. I mean, I think it's now where we've reached a point where there's this combination of a broken system and also a generation of kids who aren't totally prepared for, first of all, the amount of pressure and the, you know, all of the things they need to do to get into school, but they're also not prepared to face these kinds of challenges on their own when they need to be, because maybe generationally, like, they've been coddled way more than we were when we were kids.
Well, that's my only point. At the end of the day, what I hope comes out of this, because as you said, this is a scandal, but it is not one that surprises anyone. I think some of the surprise is just the money values. you know, in terms of $500,000. I mean, stuff like that is the shocking thing of it, and obviously some high-profile people involved. But as I said, nobody has been shocked that, there's some, you know, shenanigans going on and getting kids to a college. That I understand. And so hopefully, A, this shines a light, like you said, on a broken system so that it is more equitable and fair, and people of privilege do not have that ability to manipulate the system. Because I think that if these kids, if these parents either cop a plea or whatever happens to them, I'm sorry. I know it's tough love, but every one of those kids needs to be taken out of that school because they did get in illegally or improperly, and they did take the seat of somebody who perhaps did do all those things that you talked about, and should have legitimately gotten in. So I'm sorry, you know, if it sounds mean, and you say, "Oh, well, the poor kid." Well, no, it's not the poor kid, because we have to also put some blame on the child. If you're allowing this to happen, then you say, "No, I'm not. I'm taking the test on my own." No, I'm not letting you Photoshop my head on somebody's on some rowing team's kid's body.
Right.
I mean, if you have raised your kid that they don't know that's wrong, then once again, you've done a horrible job. So the kid does have to face some consequences here.
Well, okay. So now Yale has said in the last few days that they are rescinding the admission of one of the students whose families paid a bribe to get them in. Now, my takeaway from that is that this is not a student who's already there but had been accepted, okay? Now, USC, I think, said that they hadn't come to a conclusion yet about what they would do with students who were involved in this who were already there. Certainly all of these schools right now are having to come to grips with how they're going to handle it. They're also having to come to grips with who on their faculty was involved
right.
in some way.
Oh, I mean, the tentacles are...
But I will say this. I've thought a lot about what should happen to these students, you know, because it doesn't necessarily seem super straightforward, and especially if you give them the benefit of the doubt and you say, okay, their parents did this. They didn't necessarily know and maybe didn't know about it. But I guess I've kind of come to the same conclusion as you, which is they should not be allowed to go to those schools.
No.
And even if they're already there, they should be kicked out. And not because they've done anything wrong, but because that is how life works.
Exactly. And that's my point.
Now are going to learn a hard lesson, which is a hard lesson that a lot of students trying to get into schools the honest way learn, which is you don't always get what
right.
you want, even if it's no fault of your own.
Right. And that's my
don't
point.
Always work out for you.
You have to. You cannot, as I said, you cannot manipulate. You can manipulate this world of puppy dogs and rainbows for only so long. And when someone gets out to the real world, they're going to find out that there are harsh realities, and you become a better person in how you deal with rejection more than with how you deal with success.
Right.
And it is those moments when you had to dig down deep and had to bounce back that maybe allowed you then to succeed in another way. And my point is, I hope that A, the system gets cleaned up to some extent, if that's possible, because colleges are just, you know, they're a little academia world with their own rules, at least they think. But at the same time, I hope it is this is a learning moment and an aha moment and a step back moment for some parents to say, okay, what is the lesson that I take from this in what I'm doing? So
yeah.
that you,
I think it is important for, and the kids who do get kicked out of schools will learn this and maybe learn it for the very first time in their lives. But even with children my kids' age, and I regularly find myself saying this to them about things that are, in the grand scheme of things, inconsequential. But it's important for me to understand this because they get disappointed about things, whether we consider it to be an inconsequential
right.
situation or not. They're kids, so they do. They get, and then I always say to them, you know, sometimes in life, in fact, everyone in life has to deal with disappointment. It's just the way life goes. And I want you to know that. The sooner you know that, the better. Because, like, you can't not, things are, you're there, you know, you're not always going to get the things you want in life. Things are not always going to go your way. And it's better for you to know that now.
And what I love, the great irony of this is now this Olivia Jade girl, Lori Loughlin's daughter, she now is saying how her mother ruined her life.
Yeah, that's what someone told me the other day. I didn't actually read that firsthand, but I mean that just kind of blows you away.
So what I love is now here's Lori Loughlin and her husband going to these ridiculous lengths to be the perfect, in quotes, parent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they are not only being vilified by the society, but they were trying to be the perfect parent to their daughter, and now their daughter resents them. If they had minded their own business, you know, that's what kills me, is that they actually thought that they were being the best parents, and now their daughter hates them.
Right.
For embarrassing her.
Throws her right under the bus.
Yeah, so, you know, once again, all that you did turned out for nothing. Because now it was as if you didn't even pay attention to that kid for the last 18 years. That's where she feels right now.
Right.
So, like I said, in conclusion here, I mean, there's no easy answers. There's no right or wrong answer per se. But I think what's most important is to realize that you cannot cut every corner. I'm not saying that you don't look for ways to provide opportunities or, as you said before, guiding and helping and supporting. But when the parent starts to get too involved and too, in charge of things, you are not only are you creating a false reality, but you are not supplying this human being, just like the animal kingdom. You are not teaching them the skills. You are not providing them with the tools to get on without you. And I know that can't be easy, to think that your kid is not dependent on you, but that is the perverse, you know, reward.
Right.
If your kid can get on without you and can lead a normal life and a successful life and a worthy life, then what you need to be able to do is to be able to stand on the outside and look from a distance and be proud of that, of them being their own person.
You have to let go.
Yeah, you have to.
I'm sure it's hard, and I know I will be a basket case when I reach that point, but yeah, you got to get on
with it. Yeah, and so I think that hopefully, this will shine a light or at least cause some people to take a step back and perhaps even from a society begin. I'm starting to hear more and more. I've been ranting and I've been screaming in the forest for decades on this. And now we're seeing the results of it. And now we're finally starting to see people realizing, you know, this helicopter parenting and this is not the way to go. And sadly, there was a lot of bad parental advice that was being promoted many years ago. And I don't blame the parents of the day for doing that either. That was, everybody goes with, oh, is this something new? Let me try this. I understand that. It's not easy. But we are seeing that the overprotection, the overcoddling, you know, I'm not saying that the way I was raised was perfect either by any means. Mm-hmm. But sadly, to there were kids that were getting hit. There were kids that were ignored. So that wasn't the best way to do it either. But then to correct it is not 180 degrees the other direction. We never do anything in this society, at least in America, in moderation.
Right.
When we correct something, we overcorrect.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here. And now you're seeing the result of that. And so hopefully this is just a little, you know, this isn't going to change the world. But maybe if a parent is very serious, they look at the underlying motives of what was behind this. And you can, look in the mirror and say, okay, am I on that road? Because if I'm on that road, I want to get off that road.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's where this stands. But my gosh, as you said, when I read the headline, I thought, why is Felicity Huffman going to college?
It did not compute in any way. It was so bizarre.
And then I thought she should have been arrested for her face surgery. But that's another subject.
Now talk about screaming in the forest. You've been screaming in the forest about that one for years. And poor Felicity Huffman, every time she shows up at an awards show, you always have something to say about her.
Well, all I said was when that scandal broke, I on my Facebook page, I put a picture of Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman. I just put talk about Desperate Housewives. That's all I said.
I know, right?
That's all I said. Well, I'm glad to hear that this is something that as a parent of young kids that you do think about because, like I said, I think it's an important perspective to have because you are right in that sweet spot, like you said. You're at a point now where in the next 5 years, I mean, don't forget, as much as your kids think the world revolves around you, in 3 or 4 years, they're not going to want to talk to you. I mean, when they turn 14 or 15, I mean, maybe when they're 25, they'll think you're cool again. Maybe, if you're lucky. God,
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
But I'm just saying, I mean, there's a good 10 years gap there.
Yeah.
Where you are totally, whatever.
Right.
So
yes, yeah. Your mere presence embarrasses.
Right, exactly.
It's
so
already started.
Yeah. So I said, I mean, I understand the parent's job is the most important, the most difficult, and the most thankless. But if you do it right, because we've seen what harm bad parenting does not just to a child, but to our society. Why do you think when you see people shooting up buildings and killing people, that's the result of bad parenting.
Well, yeah.
That hurt. So we are all, I am all, even though I'm not a parent, I am affected by not you personally, but you generally, by your bad parenting.
Right, yeah.
Because then I'm afraid to step out of my house or I'm going to get mugged. Or I'm afraid to, if I'm in a library, is someone going to walk in and shoot the place up? You know, so there is...
From the moment that I became a parent, one of my main goals has been not to raise jerks.
Right.
So, you know, that... Because that, let's face it, yeah. Because then someday those jerks grow up and then they're out in the world
right.
being jerks.
Exactly. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's your... Yes. That's a good... That is a good... Actually, that's a great overriding philosophy. Ultimately, I don't want to raise a jerk. If you can at least accomplish that, you've done a good job.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the goal.
Well, so far from what I understand, I mean, how could James be a jerk? He listens to the best podcast in the world. So
right, exactly. He's got good taste in podcasts. That's for sure. He does okay.
Oh,
he does
gosh.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Emily. We'll talk to you again and keep on parenting.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. Oh, are you not going to hit here? Come on. Wow, how's that for an overmodulation? Anyway, this is Elton Jim saying thank you for tuning in to episode number 150 here of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. We thank you for downloading, clicking, scrolling, or whatever it is that you find us on a regular basis. All we ask for is 1 hour of the 168 hours of your week. I don't think that's a lot to ask for. I am Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen.